All right, good morning, everyone. We've got all the pastors around the table. Jack's back, and we've got from Baptist News Global, 80,000 Jews have fled Russia since Putin invaded Ukraine, and this is March 16, 2023.
Jews are urged to flee Russia as the persecution of religious minorities in that country increasingly matches the oppression of Ukrainian faith groups. An exiled rabbi said during a webinar hosted by the U.S. Commission on Religious Liberty, "This new situation for Jews in Russia is becoming more and more dangerous," said Pinchas Goldschmidt, chief rabbi and president of the Conference of European Rabbis and the exiled chief rabbi of Moscow. Approximately 50,000 Jews have immigrated from Russia to Israel since Vladimir Putin's February 22 invasion of Ukraine, and about 30 more thousand have left for numerous European and Middle Eastern countries, Goldschmidt said during the USCIRF's March 15 event, titled "Russia's Invasion of Ukraine: Implications for Religious Freedom." Goldschmidt said he decided to leave Russia so he could continue to monitor and criticize the Kremlin's increasing persecution of Jews, an activity that is now illegal in that country. "We were worried about the state of the Jewish community there. Not everyone can leave," he said. "We can definitely call the Jewish community of Russia today a community in distress." In the Ukrainian invasion, the USCIRF arranged the virtual gathering to illustrate the reality that minority religious groups have become targets of repression in Russia. Joining Goldschmidt on the panel were global human rights expert, a U.S. senator, Danish Jehovah's Witness leader, formerly imprisoned in Russia, and an anonymous Crimean Tatar activist, USCIRF Chairman Nuri Turkel, opened with a reminder that Russia's ongoing legal and military actions against religious minorities in Ukraine predate the 2022 invasion. In the parts of Ukraine occupied and controlled by Russian forces since 2014, we have seen Russia effectively export the religious freedom violations it has long committed within its own borders, including banning religious groups as extremists, issuing lengthy prison sentences for peaceful religious activities, and prohibiting religious literature, Turkel said. Since the Crimean annexation, Russia also has brutally oppressed the region's Muslim Tatar population through physical attacks and long prison sentences related to religious identity and for objecting to the occupation, he added. And Russia has doubled down on the repression of its own citizens, religious freedom, and other related human rights and fundamental freedoms. Disinformation campaign. Putin's attack on Russia and Ukrainian religious liberty also have been marked by a disinformation campaign designed to convince the international community that the invasion of Ukraine was just and necessary, said USCIRF Vice Chairman Abraham Cooper. Disturbingly, the Russian government has repeatedly turned to shocking examples of anti-Semitic rhetoric and Holocaust distortion as part of that effort. When President Putin announced his country's invasion of Ukraine, he falsely claimed that the goal of his so-called special military option was to demilitarize and to denazify Ukraine. We know that there is no such justification for Russia's aggression against its neighbor, and that such claims against Ukraine have no basis in reality.
All right, everyone does not agree with Abraham Cooper on that statement. We have church members who do not believe. We have church members that are on Russia's side on this issue. So that there is quite a dissension concerning this idea right here, and I don't even know if around the table we're in unanimity concerning that.
Do these church members claim, I don't know who they are, do they claim to have some kind of access to information that we don't through just the press?
Yeah.
That there's
information that is being suppressed, and there's information that is being released.
Is it conspiracy theory type stuff, or is it people who actually know people in Russia?
No. It would be, well, as soon as you say conspiracy theory, you're making a judgment, and it seems to demean them. So even that in and of itself is...
Right, but what I mean is it first-hand information, Uncle Bob lives in Russia and he's telling us these things, or is it just listening to you know,
open source information.
Right.
Open source
that's
information.
That's what I meant by conspiracy theory.
Yeah. Right.
Well, why does open source information constitute a conspiracy? Open source was right about vaccination.
Okay, I used the word conspiracy theory incorrectly. I will retract it.
I'm just saying.
It has a negative connotation, so I'm trying to be gentle with that, John. Because
the fact of the matter is that what they're drawing upon is there is a massive, or seems to be, evidence connection between business dealings of our current White House administration through family members by proxy to Ukrainian businesses, and therefore we can't be trusted, it cannot be trusted, that the oppression of Ukraine by Russia is as innocent on Ukraine's side as proclaimed by our media.
Yeah, it's really difficult. I mean, it's just...
And my simple point was, I'm sitting here in the United States of America, and all I can rely on is information from other people. I haven't been there, I haven't seen. So how am I supposed to make a judgment? Because what I'm doing is I'm going to have to believe one source over another.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to have to believe the credibility of one source over another. That was merely
Making a judgment call, right? And we all are doing that. We're all making a judgment call.
And that with everything. I mean, our health and nutrition is the same. I mean, you know, the media promotes what big pharma and big corporations want you to hear. You know, buy more protein or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and do that. That's healthy, but it might not be.
And if you stick with the outlets that are acceptable, CNN, Fox, and others, you know, and I know they're on the other opposite sides, but even, you know, if you accept the narrative of the bigger outlets, but if you reject that and say you listen to, you know, the People's Pharmacy, and you, you know, go against what the doctors are all saying in the science, then you're labeled as a conspiracy theorist, and that's essentially how I was explaining that. But
sure.
Because anything that's not the normal mainstream view of things is seen as, people just,
But we are seeing the wholesale destruction of an entire country.
We are.
Okay, I mean, that, even it doesn't matter what side you're on the Russia-Ukraine issue, Russia is not being destroyed, Ukraine is. Russian civilians are not dying every day. Ukrainian civilians are dying every day. Russian children are still going to school every day. Ukrainian children are getting behind years, months, days, depending on what part of Ukraine you're at. I mean, it is so... I don't even know how to fall down on this, Mike, because I'm a born-again believer. Jesus is my Lord. Jesus is my Christ. He's my King of Kings, my Lord of Lords. I believe in His sovereignty over all things. I was a soldier for 20 years in the Army. In 1987, when I entered into the Army, we studied flashcards with Russian tanks, Russian aircraft, Russian helicopters. Russia was the enemy. Unequivocally, they were the enemy. We did call for fire scenarios on battlefields between the German Fulda Gap and Russia. We were prepared to go to Europe and defeat the giant again.
We had reforgers.
Right. You know, and go ahead, Mike.
And I think as we probably won't get through the whole article, but it clearly goes in the direction of that's where Putin wants to get everybody back to again. He wants to take the Soviet Union back to that powerhouse that it was in the 60s, the 70s, the 80s.
Right. So what I can't understand is I'm struggling as a pastor now and as a U.S. citizen and as a former member of the United States Army, is how is it that it seems like the vast majority of Americans are oblivious or have no concern that the two giant potential enemies of the United States are in bed together, okay? That the president of China is eating breakfast, lunch, and dinner with the president of Russia right now. I mean, and it seems like It's of no concern to the President of the United States. It's of no concern to the Senate. It's of no concern to the House of Representatives. And I just don't get it. I don't understand why we are not putting Putin back in his place and saying you're not going to resurrect the Soviet Union of the 1980s. We're not going back to a new Cold War all over again. It's not in our best interest to go back to a Cold War. It's not in our best interest to give China the perception that they can team up with Russia. Can anyone imagine for a moment around this table or listening to this podcast what your life would be like if China became our number one enemy in a very literal sense?
Yeah, it'd be bad.
Yeah, when you think about all the products that we get.
Yes, that's exactly what I'm driving at.
Or the amount of land they own within our own borders.
Right, but I'm just driving at the fact that the American public doesn't understand that nearly 50, 60, 70% of everything that they enjoy, touch, feel, buy, order on Amazon was made in China. And that their entire way of life would just be overnight tremendously. I mean, why is Taiwan such a big deal? Well, it's because of those little tiny semiconductors that they make. Okay? Mike, I feel like that 90% of the American public is just utterly clueless. Like, they just live their lives with a level of ignorance that is embarrassing.
So, I don't know if y'all have heard, but China, the president of China, brokered a peace treaty this past week between Iran and Saudi Arabia.
Mm-hmm.
And they now have loyalties to China, both nations, large OPEC-producing nations are now in partnership with China. So now we're not even talking about our simplistic things. We're talking about our fuel supply.
Yeah, exactly, John.
While we're not opening our own pipeline.
Exactly.
From a nationalistic standpoint, you definitely have that. My mind, and from a Christian standpoint, in reading this, is one of the major tenets of communism is the denial of God. It is a very atheistic political point. So whether I believe that there's corruption that led to Russia's invasion, whether I believe that, no, Ukraine is innocent as white, you know, just as pure as snow, that hasn't been touched on Christmas morning, you know, any of those kind of things, it doesn't matter. What I do know is that both of them have been communist in the past. One of them still is definitively. China is communist. Therefore, they have inherently a desire to see God removed from society. So therefore, the persecution of religions altogether is not surprising and probably should be considered valid as a claim made here in this article. Two, with the Jewish people being the primary ones that this is happening to, it makes me wonder, since we don't believe in the dispensational view of eschatology, we believe that the things that are contained in Revelation are occurring now, if this isn't a portion of the fulfillment of the pushback of the Jewish people into their own land, because it's the only place that is becoming a safe haven for them around the world. You have the Muslims pressing them, now you have the communists pressing them. How long before the capitalists press them? Well, that's been tried in Germany. I know that they were true capitalists, but they were capitalistic ideologies. They weren't full-blown communism. The Jewish people throughout history have always been the bad guys for anything that's economically disfavorable. So as we see this, we have to wonder, is this a portion of what's being done to meet what the Bible tells us about the return of the people to the land through this persecution?
Well, it's our public school systems are doing the absolute worst that they've ever done in the time of educating children. I think that's a very fair statement. COVID knocked us back years, and it'll be questionable whether we ever catch up again. So people don't even understand what socialism is. They don't understand what communism is. They don't understand free economies, capitalism. It's a level of ignorance that is profound, maybe unprecedented in the history of America.
Yeah, but you got to think, it's following a pattern. The first thing we stopped teaching when you and I were growing through school was the idea of republicanism. That there's an idea of difference between a republic and a democracy. And it was wholesale fed to us that we're a democracy, we're a democracy, we're a democracy. The Constitution is not designed as a democracy.
Yeah.
But we were told that, democracy, democracy, democracy. So now everything's a threat to our democracy. Well, democracy always devolves into an oligarchy, which is akin to a dictatorship, which can be driven through socialistic means because you control all that's produced and at least regulate by control all that's produced, all that's consumed, create the consumerism, divide the people by their ethnicities, divide the people by their religions, divide the people up until you have a situational design that's favorable to you to then take the next step, which is full-blown communism, and enter a totalitarian state. And you then arrest, on charges, all of your political opponents for anything that you can get to stick.
And so my point was that this level of ignorance is setting the conditions for those type of things to happen.
Yeah.
And we're not even concerned about the fact that there is a union between two communist nations that's developing right now that should be of the same level of concern that it should have been in World War II when we saw the same axis of evil coming together and we were just oblivious to it until they were bombing Pearl Harbor, and then we kind of woke up to the reality that, oh wow, there is an enemy out there. We should be concerned. And as a Christian, I can say, well, I'm just going to trust in the Lord, and I must trust in the Lord, and I will trust in the Lord. But Jeremiah tells me to seek the nation of the welfare of the nation that I'm in. So I'm called to be an informed citizen. I'm called to open my mouth and say things. You know, it's a dichotomy in some sort, but yet it's two responsibilities that I have simultaneous. And anybody who's listening to this podcast ought to be just as concerned.
And I think, you know, a lot of where that comes from is across the United States, we're very much focused on today. You know, how does this handle, you know, what goes on with my life today? And we're just not concerned about the future. We're not looking down the road. We're not looking at causality. We just want what's right now best for me today.
This very given moment.
Yep.
Right. So, in a micro picture of that, Mike, is I want President Biden to keep draining the strategic oil reserves so that gas prices stay low. And I don't really care if we get to the point where there's no oil in there and we have no ability to respond to a global crisis, just as long as right now I don't have to pay $4 a gallon for gas.
Yes.
You know? Or I'm so concerned about some ridiculous thing like climate change, which might be a billion years later or a million years later, that we're not going to drill. It's like these levels of disconnect that are just so unrelated. There's nothing logical about the thinking. Nothing is more important for national security right now than the next president of the United States to go whole hog on oil production. Nothing would be more important than national security than to be able to reclaim the position of global leader in petroleum production. Because that would level the playing field instantly, Jack. That would take the OPEC nations and bring them back down to size. That would take the Russian value of the Russian oil and bring it back down to size. That would, because right now China is buying Russian oil. Yeah. And that's how they're funding the war against Ukraine, is through China. But if we could reclaim that position of global leader instead of worrying about global change, climate change, that may or may not be a reality. I mean, who cares about climate change if you're in a communist nation and you're eating a quarter cup of rice and beans every day?
You know, we have to think about what is luxury of thought and ideology right now and that is it. It's a luxury for us to think about. We don't want the world to get hot and heat up and have climate change when there's a more immediate need that we have to address.
I just don't understand why the free world, the Western culture, is allowing Russia to just continue to destroy an entire nation. And I mean, John, when I say destroy, I mean, we're talking about schools, hospitals, community centers. I mean, not military targets. This is the wholesale destruction. You should see the satellite imagery. If you've not taken time to go look at what's out there, you need, listener, you need to go out there and see. This is what it looked like, and this is what it looks like now. I would akin it to any of y'all that can remember when the tornado came through and it went down Riley Road in Fayetteville, and how you just drove down Riley Road, and it was just utterly devastated. I mean, devastated. Well, can you imagine all of Fayetteville like that? Everywhere? And that's an entire cities of 500,000, quarter of a million, a million. They're just devastated. Not isolated little spots, not pockets. Literally building after building after building after building. The wholesale destruction of entire communities. What's it going to take to rebuild Ukraine when this is over with?
I don't know. Bosnia is still rebuilding.
Exactly.
And I was there right after the war ended. And you walked through the rubble. Yeah. You went to apartment buildings that half of it remained standing, half of it was gone. So the outer wall was blankets because people were trying to occupy and live in it because they needed a place to live.
And what year was that, Jack?
95, 96.
Yep, same thing. I flew into Albania as a as a paratrooper in the 82nd Airborne Division, 3505, 3 Panther, Josh. And we landed in Albania. It was wicked raining, cold as can be. They put us up in this building, three-story building. The wind was just howling through the building. And I could not figure out, why am I staying in a building that doesn't have windows? You know, this is 1995, 1996. What am I doing in a building that doesn't have windows, right? And so I began to investigate with the locals when we stayed a couple days there. We found out that building that we were in had yet to be rebuilt from World War II. World War II. Got an opportunity to go out on the beaches of Albania there where you're looking across into Italy, and there were pillboxes on there, large concrete pillboxes, so that when you're out on the beach, when you're at Myrtle Beach and you're sunbathing and the nuclear alarm goes off, everyone runs to inside these concrete pillboxes. You know, that's the Cold War. And the American public is clueless as to what the Cold War was, how it was won, how important it is to maintain that that position of global leader, that we don't want Germany divided again. We don't want new Berlin walls built. We don't want to go back to a state in which we're, how many artillery pieces do you have? How many artillery pieces do we have? How many tanks do we have? How many tanks do you have? How many fighter planes do you have? I mean, 60 Minutes did an amazing special Sunday night. You should watch it on YouTube, Mr. Listener, on the state of our Navy right now. China has just moved to the position of the largest Navy in the world. We used to own that. We used to just, that was just our spot, Mike. I mean, it was unequivocal. It was like the position of Chick-fil-A when it comes to fast food, you know? And nobody competed with Chick-fil-A. 6 days a week, and they outpaced everybody, hands down. Well, that was our Navy globally. That was our Navy globally. China now has that spot. How are we not concerned about these things? I just don't understand how we're not concerned about it. Josh, do you hear anybody talking about it?
No.
I don't even hear any of the presidents. I mean, are our presidential contenders?
Well, we've talked about it before. It's like the national debt.
Right.
It's just a topic we just don't talk about. We just ignore it.
And I think the reason is they're both for the same reason, which is they seem insurmountable. I mean, I'm sitting here listening to all this. I'm like, okay, well, what's the solution? And I think that, you know, nobody, well, not very many in America have the appetite to go to another extended war. Nobody in America probably believes that anything good can come out with a war directly with Russia. So the, you know, the answer is to kind of just kick the can down the road. And, you know, when the first days when they were invaded, you know, that would have been the moment to make a decisive action.
Yep.
But as the campaign just lingers, people just get less and less interested. It becomes more and more background hum. And but I can understand from a leadership standpoint not wanting to act in the first days because you want to see how things unfold. Is there going to be a diplomatic thing? Is it going to solve itself? You don't want to, you know, because, and I think, you know, this too has a big impact. Vietnam is still fresh in our memory. And, you know,
Afghanistan is still fresh in our memory.
Right. Afghanistan and
Vietnam War II.
You would have to be in the military and on more knowledgeable terms than I would to see, you know, which still has a bigger feeling of unresolvedness, the Vietnam or Afghanistan. But
Afghanistan.
Really?
Mm-hmm. It's closer. Your Vietnam veterans are all retired. They were senior NCOs when I came in.
Yeah, they're dead.
Yeah, they were the ones that were training us. They're predominantly gone. World War II is completely forgotten. And, you know, you're talking, Pastor, about Russia and the Cold War and everything else. And, John, you made a statement about forgetting and just kind of letting things happen. And we've been through this cycle already. We went through it with Hitler. And Hitler took a nation, waited a little bit after everybody got done telling him how bad he was, and then took another nation. And then they told him how bad he was, and he waited a little bit, and he took another nation. Well, we've already seen Russia do this. They took Crimea, mm-hmm. the Crimean Peninsula, and we let it happen. So they waited a little bit. And as the propaganda died down, people forgot, he moved again. And we're letting him do it again. The massive difference in pre-World War II was we operated on a doctrine of appeasement. We allowed it to go on, and we appeased him, and we gave Hitler a few demands that he made, and some debt relief, and all these different appeasement methods, as long as you don't take any more. And we're not actually officially doing that, but by doing nothing, it's still a doctrine of appeasement. Whereas what Pastor was talking about, you got five artillery pieces, I got five artillery pieces, you got two nuclear warheads, I got two nuclear warheads, that was detente. It was the idea of we're going to keep leveling up and leveling up and leveling up. And it's big, it's scary, but it works if you want to contain. So detente and containment would be simultaneously the same doctrinal operation. The thing of it is that we are actually in a posture of appeasement at this point.
Sure we are.
And we're letting them just slowly erode away who we are because the buildup of militaries is scary. It's what happens if the button is pushed. Well, how many concrete bunkers do we have left? I mean, all of those things are there, and you're right. People don't have the stomach for it anymore. It's crazy.
And I think we rolled two concepts that we've talked about already this morning together. If we look at what is happening relationally between Russia and China, and we think about how you talked about with Hitler and then now the Soviet Union, we take a little bit of a country or we take a country and then we back off and wait and see until everything dies down. It really seems like that China is watching and they're learning what Russia is doing within Ukraine, and at some point here, they're going to do the same thing with Taiwan.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You asked what can be done, John. You know, I give a couple ideas. I gave one already, and it should be the number one priority for the nation, and that's to regain energy independence. That should be our number one focus, to where we supply our own natural gas, our own crude oil. We wreak cake up. Number two, we've got to start bringing immigrants through a proper vetting position. Why is that so crucial? Because number three, we're never going to get to where we produce industry again, manufacturing, until we get workers. And the only way we're going to get workers that can work the plants that will produce the products we need is to bring in immigrants. We've got to increase the labor participation rate. And the way you increase the labor participation rate is you come up with the best vetting process you can ever imagine. So instead of having them cross in tunnels and through cars, and we're running them down on the highways. We need to be vetting them. We need to have an incredible vetting system. And I don't care if you go all the way down to a DNA vetting system so that you can ensure that the person is who they claim they are. What, fingerprints, picture ID, global vetting. And then once you're vetted, then you come into our country and you become a worker. And you contribute to the production of who we are as a nation. I mean, let's not forget that all of us around this table, I believe, are sons and daughters of immigrants. My Oma and Opa came over after World War II. That's why I'm here. And I think many of you around this table would say the same thing in some form. And they came here to seek a better way of life, and they got involved. My Opa became an engineer and contributed for 50-plus years. My Oma was a social worker, worked in nursing homes, etc., and contributed to the American way of life. There are lots of people coming through the southern borders who also want that better way of life. And instead of saying, build the biggest wall and keep them on the other side, we need to be figuring out how to properly welcome them so they're not bringing the fentanyl over, they're not bringing bombs over, they're not being terrorists and all that. They're not all terrorists. They're not all drug runners. Some of them are good people that could become amazing citizens. And nobody's talking about how to properly vet them.
Some of them coming over are better citizens than we got living here.
Absolutely.
I mean, because they're willing to work. Just on that basis alone,
it sets them apart.
Right. And I've said this many times on these podcasts, but it's really sad because those workers used to be people we call teenagers. And you had to work your way up to, hey, I want $25 an hour. And now it's just like, oh, well, I got to a certain age. It's my right to have $25 an hour. You know,
right, and that's why I say, John, by increasing the pool of workers, that will naturally bring
over there, though, send some back, just as an exchange program.
It'll naturally bring down. But again, what presidential candidate do you hear talking about this stuff right now? The answer is none.
There's no presidential candidate. There's a couple of representatives, but their voices are so small in the mechanisms of the two parties.
Mm-hmm.
I know Crenshaw speaks a lot about controlling the fentanyl and having a proper vetting system that brings in workers but controls the filtering of the cartel influence. I know lately he's gone into a war hawk position on the cartels, which is eroding people's confidence in him as a rising leader of our nation. It's even as a voice of, like, maybe moving from representative to senator or something to that effect. He has long been a advocate, of course, being from Texas, of petroleum production and that type of thing. He's out of the Houston area. But he's also says we can't leave it in a single point of failure for energy production. He's a massive advocate for the low-carbon footprint nuclear power.
Sure.
Which would be a massive secondary.
But we're not even talking about energy independence as a national security issue, Jack. And it is. We don't even understand the number of parts, things that are made overseas for our own military.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
I was thinking.
Right. It's just incredible, you know. How is it, for example, that you can go, a TSA screening system can just have thousands of people going through at these major airports all day long, and they're making sure that they're just screen. Why couldn't you come up with a TSA venue for bringing people into our nation and you know, 48-hour screening, 72-hour screening? I'm just talking off the top of my head, but I know that we have a lot of smart people in America. And if you put them together in a room and you said, we're going to design a vetting process, What would it take to do international background checks? What would it do to take local background checks? What would it do to screen the bodies to make sure that they're not bringing drugs inside their stomachs or the cavities or their bodies? You know what I'm saying? I mean, we have all the technology to do all of that.
I think it's the opposite side of the border effect. Okay, even if I brought them through, while they're being vetted, what do we do with them? Where do we hold them? Do we have an Ellis Island anymore type of effect? I'm using Ellis Island as an example. Well, Ellis Island can only hold so much. Do I have an Ellis Island, though it's not an island, but a land designation area on the Reno.
And the answer is yes. The answer is yes, Jack.
And how many people are going to give up their acreage to that end?
And that's why we need a leader, because a leader can cast a vision and can get the American public to see the necessity of this. And how, if China decides, we are not exporting anything to you anymore, America.
Yeah.
How long is it before the Amazon warehouses are empty, John? Just utterly empty.
Well, we've already seen it.
Right, exactly.
We've already seen it with the, are we going to get Christmas?
Right, exactly.
You know, this just talking off the top of my head, but why don't we build industries all along the border? Where, you know, the one door's Mexico and the other door's United States. And, you know, you come in, you work, you prove yourself, you get vetted, you can exit that door.
Well, what time is it? I think it's time for our podcast to be over.
Yep.
Thanks for listening. I don't think we solved all the problems, but we exposed you to a couple ideas. Be informed. Be informed. Be different. You know what's happening in the world that God created. You know, these are image bearers in Russia. And if they're far, far away, but they could just be just as easily be us. I mean, we don't live in isolation, folks. We have to think about things that are important and harder than what are we having for dinner tonight and what movie are we going to this Friday. We need to think more than that. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.